It is Saturday, January 16th, 2010, 10 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news in the second half, your questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Miles Elam, he's a slacker and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Al Luck. Al Luck is a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hi, everybody.
We're in Santa Cruz. It's sunny, though very shortly. It'll be stormy and overcast and raining, and there'll be... pigs will fly from this, dogs and cats living together, the whole thing, right?
It's okay. Floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, water spouts.
Which means that next week we'll get a lot of calls about my computer died because I had it on and my hard drive crashed because the power went out and I didn't have a backup and how do I recover data? And we'll say, did you have a backup? And they'll say, no. And we'll say, that's too bad. If you want to spend $1,200, you can get your data back. Is it that important to you? As you can see, I've been doing the show for a while.
Uh-huh.
Here's the trick with the weather in the Santa Cruz Mountains specifically, and probably up and down the coast where you have lots of trees. Trees fall. Power lines get pulled down. Everyone is aware of this. A hard drive can get damaged from just a power outage. Laptops are pretty much immune to this, but desktop machines. You can get an uninterrupted power supply for your computer, though surges do not get protected that well from those. So here's what we recommend. Don't have your computer on when there's a high probability of the power going out. Secondly, and more importantly, have a backup of your entire system on another hard drive, which is not on during the time when you might lose power.
It's not too good for your HDTV either.
You don't think so?
No, actually, I know there was some kind of – it happened in our area, and my neighbors – I mean, there was literally a – it was like a burn mark. It went right through his TV and just knocked out his TV. And, yeah. That there's no, the electric company isn't going to say, oh, we'll pay for that.
No, they won't.
they're not going to do anything like that.
Do your home warranties and rental agreements and things of that?
I imagine.
Do they cover that kind of stuff?
Something.
But then the deductible's pretty bad.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think he had anything. But, it's an excuse to buy a new TV, but...
But that's not a great excuse when you don't have much money.
Right.
Yeah. Something that comes up for me is when you were talking about have a backup and have it not connected to the computer and off. What happens if someone has a time capsule? It's always on. And that's their router. If they have that off, they don't get internet connectivity.
Well, here's the thing that's kind of nice. That most of the time when you either lose your data or a power surge is probably not going to destroy your drive unless your drive is writing. What do you think? I mean...
Well, destroy your drive, you're talking about file system corruption versus physical damage. Those are two different things.
And that's the thing is the hard drive is not going to get physically damaged, I would assume, from a power outage. But then again, sometimes when you give weird signals to a drive, you can cause the head to move rapidly and the platter to start up too quickly. I mean, is it possible to damage it from just power outage? I've never seen that.
I would be skeptical.
What we have seen happen very commonly is you're writing to your drive, specifically the index part, the partition table part, and the power goes out, and that write doesn't complete, and that is a problem. Wouldn't you say, Miles?
It is if you don't have a journaling file system. That's why journaling file systems were created, was so that it would say, okay, I'm about to do this, then it would do it, okay, I'm done. It's a three-step process.
Here's the interesting thing. If you're on a Macintosh, you have a journaling file system, most likely, right out of the bat, right? That's by default.
That's an option.
If you have Windows 7 with NTFS, you probably are, but if you're using FAT32, not so much.
And you probably aren't, though external drives very commonly are FAT32 because it's the most universal format, which means you get your hard drive, you have it, your USB hard drive for backup, and you have it, you partition it, you start using it. And then if that thing's starting to write right when something happens, you can get that corrupted. Now, the data is actually still there. It's just very hard to get to because you don't have lookup information on it.
But a time capsule, it is journals.
So time capsule, you're okay. Now, the thing is, with electricity strikes or even a tree branch falling and shorting out the high power lines in a way, you can get high power spikes, which will normally take out your power supply, kill the power supply of the device. So for that Apple product, the time capsule, you're going to destroy this power box. Do you have a time capsule?
No, I use a network area storage.
Do these have a external block, wall wart kind of device? I would assume they do. So it's possible you just have to replace that if the power goes out. But the biggest thing is, now's the time. Go to your favorite electronics store. Pick up a USB hard drive. Get a backup of the stuff that's really important to you, which you would cry for days that you if you lost it. Put it on that and then remove that machine, that hard drive from your computer and turn it off. And then enjoy and have some candles.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the power going out, too. I mean, it's the inconsistency. I mean, the power goes out, and so then the power company turns it right back on again. I mean, it could be like a second or two, and you know, that happens, you know, and your brownouts. And I mean, it's just...
The brownouts are really
bad. It's the inconsistent power is what the problem is, and yes, the power's going to go out, but I mean, it's going to go out in my house for sure. I'm ready. I have
so
generator.
You said to me this morning, get a generator.
Yeah, I said...
I don't have a generator, it's true.
You don't have a generator, but you're, you know...
So what kind of generator should I get? Should I go ahead and pick up one of those $50 ones?
Well, you know, you go and you see generators in the store and you say, oh, look, there's one that's, 2,000 watts and it's really expensive, but I can get this 8,000 watts one for much cheaper. But, you know, the difference is that, you know, the you can get higher wattages cheaper, but then, you know, they're about as noisy as a Who concert and give off as much smoke as a Kiss concert.
Oh, man, that's bad.
And so you start to think, and don't expect it to start up on the first pull. And sure, you don't want to leave it outside. You know, I mean, you're out there trying to struggle with these things and they're loud, but, and then they've got a really inconsistent power wave.
Okay, but Al, I want to power my entire house. I'm going to unplug the mains and plug this thing in. Don't want to do that?
That's crazy because you have so many passive devices in your house. Your TV is, even though it's not on, it's still on. It's
still, you know, using energy.
It stays, I mean, they stay charged so that they come on quickly because people like things. So there's all these things in your house that are using electricity, but they're, as far as you're concerned, not on.
Right.
So I always feel, or this is my philosophy, is I have a 2,000 watt generator. It's a little Honda,
and that thing is a sweet generator.
Yeah, it's about twice the size of a sewing machine. Would you say?
Yeah, I'd say that.
I guess it depends on the sewing machine.
Or twice the size of a toaster. Maybe three times the size of a toaster.
But the thing about
isn't that the universal measurement size toaster?
Toaster?
No,
bread box. The thing about it is it starts up on the third pull. It's only 2,000 watts, but it's a really clean signature. The noise, it's basically, I mean, it's like my neighbor's room, you know, it's on like that. It can power my router, my computer, my refrigerator, a couple of chargers and a couple of lights, and that's all I need.
Right. And you use extension cords?
I use extension cords from it, and that way I can control where the power is. I'm not giving all this power to all these weird things in the house.
The only thing dangerous about that device is it's so that generator, it's so quiet, you'll want to put it in the house because, you know, it would be so easy.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it's putting out carbon monoxide, and that's, for some reason, not good for us. I can't remember.
Well, you shouldn't really breathe carbon monoxide, everybody. Uh-huh. The thing is, it doesn't look like a lot of big black clouds of smoke coming out of it.
Nice
it really looks like it's fine, but you know.
So that 2,000 watt generator that's quiet and goes, and you might want to put it inside because it's so pretty and clean.
Yeah.
How much does that run?
Those things are about, I think, I don't remember what that one was, but it was about twice what you'd pay for one of the giant ones.
The
giant
that look like a lawnmower in a case.
Yeah, they're really big. You can't lift them up. The Honda thing, it's like all plastic, but there's a bunch of different kinds.
Yeah, that's the thing about your generator, too. You can pick it up.
Right, you can just pick it up and carry it around.
I don't know about you.
It runs 11 hours on one tank of gas.
Yeah.
It's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so one of those smaller form factor, they're more expensive, but it might be a nice thing to get. But that's not going to protect, and the power that comes out of it is a lot cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to protect your computer from surges unless you're already on that. Right, so you go.
Right.
The power might go out tonight. You turn everything off. And
just
have a backup of stuff. Miles,
Something I've come across recently, just on in terms of power generation, I thought was interesting. There's a lot of information on the net for do-it-yourself kits for converting a bicycle to generate power.
Yes.
And a human being can actually generate a non-trivial amount, I've found.
Yeah.
So it's actually, you know, something that would be really useful for if you're watching TV. It's like you're watching TV, you're
one
doing
of the project
it, and as
groups
long as you want to keep watching it, you have to keep pedaling.
Yeah, one of the project groups, it's great for kids. Teenagers, you want to play Xbox?
All right.
Get on the bike. We had a project of that. Pedal for Art. I can't remember the piece now. One of the project groups at the University of UCSC that I work at, that was one of the pieces, is putting a whole bunch of bikes together, and the audience came and powered the artwork with those bikes.
Wow.
Really neat. Really neat.
That's a cool idea.
You can learn more about that at danum.ucsc.edu. D-A-N-M, just where I work. Okay, so you might have noticed something a little different beginning of the show. We didn't have Miles and you singing, and we didn't have the older theme song, the Devo theme song.
Right.
We're saying goodbye to it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say finally, but definitely we are. Mm-hmm. And I just want to mention that this new theme song we had today was from Michael Newman. We can just call him Newman, which I like a lot.
Hello, and, Newman.
Newman. I know, it feels really addictive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And Michael has a website, which we're putting on our website now. And what happened was Michael heard that, you know, listened to the podcasts, and he decided that wouldn't it be nice to give us a theme song. So he just kind of by his own desire made a theme song for us, and we liked it, and so we're using it. But that doesn't mean that you have to sit and enjoy it and not do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I welcome anyone to participate by submitting a theme song to us, and if we like it, we'll play it, and if we don't, we don't. And we're going to be kind of doing a mix-up theme thing
in a little while. We'll end up deciding something that is, you know, appropriate, and we'll use it more consistently. It's just that it's nice to get people involved, and there's so many, especially in Santa Cruz. As soon as I started learning how to play guitar, that's when I realized every single person I know plays guitar. I was like,
why is that?
I don't know. Am I the last one or something?
Well, I don't play guitar.
No, yeah, you're not the last one.
Oh. Well, it was just bizarre. So there's got to be so many people out there, you know. We have a few in the queue, too, so.
And the motivation, by the way, for doing this is that we're Creative Commons, the show. And we haven't figured out, Miles and Al, what type of Creative Commons license we're going to use for Geek Speak. So you want to do that on air right now, Miles? Tell me what Creative Commons is.
Creative Commons is it's actually a way of getting lawyers out of individual transactions for how you deal with content. For the most part, we're used to seeing copyright as in, you know, copyright Miles Elam, 2010, all rights reserved. That all rights reserved means you are not allowed to do anything with this except read it wherever it's been posted. For example, you can't redistribute it, you can't change it, can't modify it. And what Creative Commons does is allows you to put in some simple rules for how your content can be used without relinquishing all control over it and without having to invoke a lawyer to get, you know, try to work out some deal for someone. Let's say you're a band, you have a song, and someone says, hey, I have this movie, I want to do some small scale thing. I want to use this movie, just have like some quick little snippet of your song in the background. You mind if I do that? And the band may say, oh, yeah, sure, but then whoever label they're associated with may say, wait a second, let's work out the fees and how much is this going to be and what's the limit of use and what happens if you go over this many copies of the movie go out and what's... So instead, you can say with Creative Commons, okay, yes, you can use my item, but you can't change it and you always have to say who it came from. Or you can use my song, but... and you can change it, but you always have to say where it came from. Or, you know what, I don't care. You can change it, do whatever you want with it, make some money off of it.
Okay, so we're going to do the form right now, and you can do this any content that you create and you control. And basically, the different licenses have different rules, as Miles was explaining. So we're going to do this right now on air. Right now, so I'm up at creativecommons.org, and you choose. Allow commercial use of your work. Should we let people make money with GeekSpeak? I'm going to say no. So allow modification of your work. What do you think? You guys okay with people modifying our work, meaning they could tape snippets of the stuff during the show and reuse it for other purposes, even making fun of us, for example? We can decide on whether we want. If they want to make fun of us, they could anyway because of the parody.
I'm aspect. Okay with that as long as they make attribution.
Okay. So yes, as long as others share alike. That means that's true. And attribution, I think, is another section. The jurisdiction of your license, United States, and then I'm going to fill out some more information. This will be up on our site. Basically, that's called share and share alike non-commercial share and share alike. Well, we'll have more information about that next week as we announce it at the top of every show. Okay, moving on to the news.
But just to reiterate, in order to do this, that's why we had to stop using, I mean, Devo is a copyrighted, you know, I mean, we're doing an NPR license, all that stuff now.
Right.
But, you know, if you want to release something, you can't include something like the Devo song, which right. we all really like and that's is right. really cool. It's just that, you know, I mean.
And actually, I have to get one more approval before the license gets stuck on that, and that is to ask the person that owns the GeekSpeak name right. for radio, the trademark on that, if it's okay. And mm-hmm. I think we're going to be fine with that because he's pretty awesome about things of that nature. And you know what? I'll just say that announcement right now because I say at the end of every show, but why the heck not do it now? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. And David Lawrence is the puppet master on Heroes, the actor that plays the puppet master. That's David Lawrence.
Is he still? Didn't he die?
You know, I keep on thinking he dies, but he keeps on being there, so no. And every time I say, oh, I'm sorry you're off the show, he says, I'm not off the show. Check out next week. So,
fair enough.
No, he's not off the show. All right. I don't watch a lot of TV, so I never really know the answer to that. You know, it's like 20 minutes into the show, and we've said nothing about geek news this week. So let's do some geek news. Al, what's sure. up with our hope to get rid of hydrogen, or help to get rid of battery power,
right.
excuse me.
You know. Well, you know, I talked about this lithium thing last week, and today I thought it might be interesting to mention some other battery types that are out there. There's one that was announced at CES, and this is an actual phone that they have a prototype of running. It was created by Motorola, and it's called the Moto Sliver. But they spell it MOTOSLVR.
Is it painful? Is it like a sliver?
Well, they like making those weird names.
What does it do?
Well, apparently it has a hydrogen fuel cell in it. And the problem with hydrogen fuel cells in the past is they're kind of big. But this one, they've got it pretty small. They call it a micro hydrogen platform. And it's the same size as a regular battery. And it would
wow.
It's hydrogen powered. It's kind of funny to think of hydrogen powered phone in your pocket, but
well, and it is a so go on. I mean, the fuel is the hydrogen, right?
And it lasts twice as long as the standard lithium ion battery that is used.
And all you have to do is plug it in to your home hydrogen source. I mean, where do you get the hydrogen?
Well, that's the thing. It you can charge it in as little as 10 minutes to a full charge
with electricity or with hydrogen.
With hydrogen, but it's there aren't a lot of hydrogen refueling stations.
No.
So there's a little issue
a little
with that.
A wrinkle in that. or do they sell a hydrogen generation system?
It doesn't say they sell it. They say that there's still hurdles, but there's a lot of industry interest, and they say they're completely safe.
Does it drip water as you're using it?
Yeah, don't they?
Which is the byproduct of
water?
Using.
Yeah. Well, I know there's hydrogen-powered cars.
Sure.
And, you know, for some reason, I think there's a toy out that you can get.
Yeah.
That's a hydrogen power. I don't know how you get that.
It's not that hard to make hydrogen. You basically uh-huh. shock electricity, but it's, you know, it's not cheap.
They say that we can expect to see these things by 2010.
Did you just say electricity?
Shock water, sorry.
Okay.
Electrify water?
Well, you know, that's...
I hate it when I shock electricity.
There was one other...
You know, I was playing with a Ford, a Model T Ford spark generator. Have I ever shown you that, Miles?
No.
I've got this old sparker for, I think it's a Model T, an early car. And basically it's a, it produces about 20,000 volts of electricity and not a lot of amperage. So you can play with it. You can shock yourself. As long as you don't burn your skin, it's not that painful. And I was firing it up yesterday in the lab and I realized that I didn't want to touch it. Like when I was a teenager, I'd take two metal poles and stick it right on there. But now, not so much. Anyway, so I was shocking electricity just yesterday.
Well, there's one other thing that I can talk about that is another type of energy source. And this isn't necessarily an alternative to lithium ion, but it's an alternative charger. And this thing is by RCA. It's called Airnergy.
You have these weird pronounceable things.
You know, I don't know. We're just running out of brand names.
Airnergy. So like energy, but with air in the front of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what this thing does, it's like it appears to have a USB dongle on it.
Oh, so could it be a crazy
USB? It could have been, but it's really more of a thing for charging your battery. And what it does is it you put it in an area that has a lot of Wi-Fi signals coming through, like, you know, and the act of the Wi-Fi signal going through the device creates this charge. It's like a passive charging device, and it's completely self-sustaining, and it automatically charges whenever you're near a Wi-Fi area. So you basically you have it, and it's just always going, and then it charges a lithium ion battery. So it's a constant passive charger.
It's funny because it's like stealing power from your Wi-Fi point.
I don't know if it slows the network. I don't think it could.
Well,
but
the energy is used.
Yeah, it says
you're probably decreasing the range.
It says the recharging time depends on the quality and number of Wi-Fi signals nearby. But an RCA spokesman CES said it was possible to fully charge a BlackBerry at 30% power in just 90 minutes using ambient signals.
If you're in downtown New York and have 70 Wi-Fis next to you.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what the ambient is?
You know.
I bet out by my house you wouldn't be able to charge it very quick.
It's a neat idea, though. Just like there's all these waves going through us all the time. It's sort of harnessing all this
heat.
Invisible waves.
Speaking of Wi-Fi, and I mentioned my house, Miles and I live near each other, and Miles set up a Wi-Fi network between the two houses using what is the technology called? ADC? No.
WDS.
WDS.
Wireless distribution system.
So the basic idea is that when I turn my computer on in the morning, if his laptop's on, I see him in his local network, even though we're two hops away from each other. So we have the one IP range for both the houses.
One subnet, yeah.
And we've got to get a better antenna because I'm having a lot of trouble watching movies from his computer, but that's the ultimate goal.
So you're watching the digital movies that he has over the network on your machine.
Well, I'm not yet because our speed's not
But that's the idea to do
that's one of the ideas.
And you're using it line of sight?
We have up at the pool on the property, up in the tree, there's a box that Miles and I put up last week, and it can see both of our homes. But we can't see each other's homes right now because there's lots of trees.
Yeah, and it's mostly line of sight.
It's line of sight, you know, with like kind
it's
of...
It's line of sight-ish.
It is. I mean, when you're at the antenna, you can see both houses. Mm-hmm. So you can't... I mean, but there's stuff in the way. There's bushes and things. Anyway, moving on. Miles, you haven't had any news stories, and we're 27 minutes into the show. Well,
Excellent.
Minus six.
Yeah, why do you hate me?
Good point. Okay, let's move on. I'm really curious about Internet Explorer.
There's been that news lately of Google is looking at pulling out of China, or at least threatening to.
Pulling their business out of China.
Right, because...
Which was something that people called for a long time ago, because one of the things that Google does is assist the government in restricting the content that the population
can see.
Because, of course, in China, the laws state very clearly that this is what you do, and if you want to do business there, you have to follow the laws. So there's been... I was a little upset about it, too, but Google's perspective has been, we're not really doing evil here. We're doing what we can to share what we can now
and make as much money off of another country
as possible
that we possibly can
because we're a business.
Well, there's that question of because there is nothing that happens in this world that's without some type of unintended consequence. If you're talking about something at a very large scale, whether it be power generation or computing technology or the like, it's always going to have, you know, whatever. So the question is, does the good outweigh the bad?
Right.
And that's what Google's stance had always been in China, was not having an effective search engine in China is worse than having one that's restricted.
Right.
That was their stance. Well, it turns out there was some folks that were hacking into Google systems in order to look at some political dissidents' email, specifically into Gmail. And so then Google has this topic of, wait a second, but now we're being used to actively persecute people that are trying to speak out just for speech. And that's what's prompted them to pull back and go, wait a second, this is not what we signed on for.
Right.
It turns out that Google is not the only target, though. It's also 33 other firms, including Adobe Systems, that have been targeted by... apparently by Chinese sources.
Right.
To get into usually
Chinese sources, you mean government. Chinese government.
That I don't know.
Because I'm assuming that
it's coming
things
from,
are being attacked from different... I mean, just because we have hackers here that are doing things doesn't mean the U.S. government's responsible in some sense.
Right,
I mean,
but it does look like a coordinated attack by some group. I don't have the information to say it's the Chinese government, so...
That's been the discussion.
Right, that's been the rumor.
How did they do it?
They've been going in through Internet Explorer. Strangely enough, Internet Explorer has security holes.
Which we talk about all the time. Every software can potentially have security
holes. Yes, everyone does, except that Internet Explorer is the dominant browser, and that's the, if you compromise Internet Explorer, then you've compromised more than half the browsers out there.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
On the other hand, if
therefore it's a good
if
target.
Some people use Internet Explorer and some people used Firefox and some people used Opera and some people use Safari and some people use Chrome, you don't have as big a target.
Yeah, but you still have targets. I mean, isn't it also that
the targets are getting smaller?
Do you think that only because of the distribution? I mean, do you think that's the only reason Internet Explorer is hacked because it's a large target? Or do you think that there's design differences between that and Chrome?
I think that there are some design decisions that were made. I don't know if there are flaws because a lot of these attacks have been thought up after the design was made. Like, there was no way to prepare for something that you don't even know exists.
Right.
That mantra of be prepared, you know, expect the unexpected is unreasonable.
Right.
To say... you're not going to expect that. Therefore, you should have expected it. Wait, what?
So the Chinese are using Internet Explorer to hack Google.
In this case, Google and 33 other high-tech firms. Hmm. And they were actually targeting firms that had some, that were at the highest echelons of technology that had some piece of infrastructure, some code that was of value.
Right.
It wasn't just a scattershot, whatever company happened to be available.
Let's take the mid-break, okay, and we'll continue this discussion because I think it's still important. I'm not trying to stop you from talking. Geekspeak on KSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Geekspeak is the show that you're listening to right now. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. We're in Santa Cruz, California. And, of course, we're streaming all over the world, and we have podcasts and all that. And real quickly, just want to mention that the theme song you heard today, Michael Newman wrote it and created it. He's a mechanical design engineer working at a company currently developing piezo actuator-based products for many markets, including fuel delivery, medical, and chemical industries. He has a degree in mechanical engineering with a concentration in acoustics. In his spare time, like he has any. He does whatever he can. Unfortunately, there are so many interests and hobbies and projects that he moves really slow. But he did rip out a theme song and did some modifications for us. So anyway, Newman, thank you so much for doing the theme song, and I hope that we continue to have a relationship together. And of course, you can learn more about Newman at his website, which is linked from geekspeak.org. So did you want to talk more about the
yeah,
hack? We always say don't use Internet Explorer, but...
I was actually just at a friend's house on Wednesday night talking about browsers and was talking about some of the new advances in browsers, HTML5, having a video tag, which YouTube is looking at moving toward instead of using Flash. And this person works for a very large company. And like many large companies, they are based on Internet Explorer. And he's not even on Internet Explorer 8. His company's on Internet Explorer 7 because it takes a year for them to test out all of their systems because their intranet is all web-based, to test out all of their systems to move to another browser or move to another version. And so actually with a lot of these large companies, they're less protected in some ways than the typical user.
Yeah.
Because they can't just switch to another browser and they can't just, move over to a newer version. All the patches have to be reviewed. The versions have to go through a long vetting process.
So you don't have a good solution?
Well, the next time you need to make a transition to a different browser.
Okay.
If you need Internet Explorer for internal stuff, then install the add-in for Firefox, for example, that for that intranet it works, and then every time they're browsing outside of it, it's not using Internet Explorer.
I can't remember what that plugin is called, but we have talked about other shows.
IE tab
on Firefox. It's one of those things you don't really think about until your machine is exploited. And then, people come to me and say, I think I've got a virus. And, at that point, what I do when I think I might have a virus? I wipe my system completely and reinstall. Because it's not easy to remove a virus from a computer.
or at least it can be easy, but it's really hard to be sure.
Right, right. It is actually simple, but you don't know if that's true.
Did you get everything? Did you miss it?
It's kind of like GeekSpeak.
Did the virus, when it came in, did it open up another hole that you need to deal with? Did it start up a new service that you didn't know about?
All right, Al, it's
dun,
your
dun,
turn.
Dun.
I know, I feel strange about this, but talk to me about iTimelapse. Please.
iTimelapse. It's a really neat little app. I got this from my my iPhone. It's an iPhone app.
Did you put last week's time-lapse up on Facebook?
I didn't
Facebook?
Put it on Facebook yet because we didn't talk about it, and then today I forgot to do it. So, but what it does is it's a little app on your phone, and you're able to turn it on, and it will take a picture at the interval that you specify. So, and it's got quite a range. I mean, more of a range than my camera does. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, when you think about something taking a picture, if you're taking a picture every certain number, you know, you have a higher quality picture. The even videotape isn't even
right.
What
you're talking
quality.
About is most videotapes or even DV is 720 by 480, I think, on pixels. And almost every camera is bigger than that.
Right.
Right. The iPhone's what, 3 megapixels?
Yeah, which is overkill for video.
Right.
So I was able to set my phone up and just tell it to, you know, take a picture every 5 seconds. And then, you know, you have it. We'll put the one up. I have it.
And actually, we'll right now, if you have a Facebook account, you can go to geekspeak.org. And on the left-hand side, you can join our Facebook group. And you can see one of our time-lapses of the parade, which is a really fun kind of time-lapse. The entire hour-long show.
Right.
Captured even the setup and teardown, which wasn't done with the iPhone, which was on a different camera, but same kind of principle.
Yeah. Well, the iPhone is just more convenient, and it actually worked. I mean, our show is like an hour, and I had it up there the whole hour. I didn't burn out my battery or anything.
Right.
And it although it will still work, you can dock it and then have it running while it's docked.
So it can go for a long time.
Theoretically, you could just keep going, and
it
can take, you know, thousands of pictures. And then it'll stream them together. And it allows you to choose some music to put with it, which personally I didn't think was the best feature because I should be able to put my own music with it. But they have a couple of public domain, like, you know, some classical music you can put with your, you know, your flower blooming or something, whatever you decide to do a time lapse of.
Right.
But it's a really neat little app. Being able to have it on your phone, I mean, I'm kind of a time lapse junkie. I love doing time lapse stuff. And so I think you do too.
I do.
So, you know,
the thing I love about it is that it's true that a video is a lot, you know, gets a lot of information across. But the truth is, you don't really want a video of us sitting around doing GeekSpeak, for example, right? Who cares? But one photograph, though it shows something, it's not the same type of form. And that time-lapse is that great mix between the two where it's kind of like a still and it's kind of like a video, and therefore it produces that effect of I'm engaging and watching this, not just glancing at a picture. I just really like them.
And the bottom line, anybody can tolerate us for 30 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, wait, if it's just music, I agree.
Yeah, it's iTimelapse.
And the iTimelapse app that you did last week, one of the things that was really cool is that they have a nice traditional analog clock in here, you know, those white and white face, black letters, dials moving around. And of course, in the time lapse, it's great because the minute hand just goes woo, right around. Really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Miles, I'm going to go back to you. You have a lot of good news stories today, and everything's something I want to talk about, and we don't have time for everything, so pick.
Samsung at CES has produced the world's what they call the world's first and largest transparent LED, which I think is odd because if you're first, then you're automatically the largest, the smallest, the lightest, the heaviest, and you know, all other superlatives.
The most amazing, the most magical, the boring. Yeah. We could use the ridiculous words too.
But it's a transparent organic LED display. And when I mean that, it's as you have this laptop and you have the lid open, you pass your hands behind the screen and you can see them. And it's not because like there's a camera behind it and trying to display. It's actually fairly transparent. It's about only about 40% opaque. So it looks like just a dimmed, darkened background.
Is that when you have black, it's transparent, or when you have white, it's transparent? Because most laptops, when you have white, it's transparent.
It's in this case, light.
You're not sure.
No, actually, this one you would need a special video driver, and then you'd set your background, you know, whatever the default background was, to a transparent color, which doesn't really come in handy right now. Right now, it's like if you have a transparent background, that would just mean what's the default.
Right.
But here, the default is whatever's behind the screen.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it's an organic LED.
Mm-hmm.
Will you be able to get these at the farmer's market then?
So an LED, I understand, it's a light emitting diode. That's not a big deal. Diodes are really cool little devices. They're a major part of why transistors work. In fact, is just a diode with a base attached to it that you can modify the voltage and potential between.
And the many laptops now, they say it's an LED screen, except it's not really. It's just an LED backlight.
Right. That's the thing, is that when we don't have every pixel on your screen, on your LCD, your liquid crystal display, everything of that is just a little cell that can have color in it that's transparent, and it has no light by itself. It changes the color of the cell. And
or rather, it can reduce the amount of light that comes through based upon color.
Right. Yeah. It changes its opacity. So behind it, you've got light. Now, that's fine and dandy, assuming you've got a nice white light behind there that's shining through. That white light is a lot of energy, and that's the LCD. That's the LED aspect.
Yeah, it used
laptops.
To be a fluorescent bulb,
and now it's LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have an LED screen, but the actual pixels are not LEDs. In this organic LED display, every single pixel is actually an LCD or is actually an LED,
a light emitting diode.
And it produces light, so it can be bright. So you can have white, for example, on your screen, or black from your screen. The black, I would assume, would be just opaqueness, right?
Right. Well, black, in most cases, with an organic LED that isn't transparent, the idea is that off is black.
Right. And so the thing that's really interesting about organic LEDs is you can put like a very dark black felt kind of thing behind the screen, and then your blacks are going to be more black than a normal screen.
I didn't know that organic LEDs were actually transparent to begin with. I thought it was if you don't – oh, you're right. You're right.
If you set your background. Yeah. Anyway, so that's cool and all, but – this biggest and smallest and everything, the first organic LCD. What applications are inherently useful besides, of course, lack of power or the reduction of power consumption?
They were talking about medical applications.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine, for example, that you're trying to do something and it's like a augmented reality?
Right.
You have something pointed toward it, and you see through it to whatever you're working on, but you also see annotations talking about what you're talking about.
Right. Lots of sci-fi has this kind of thing.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you for the Samsung CES. That's the Consumer Electronics Show. Al didn't go this year, so we don't have somebody on.
Hey, you didn't go either.
Yeah, but neither did Miles.
And Miles didn't go. None of us went there.
At least I covered them.
Oh. Should we take some calls?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to Scotts Valley. I drove through Scotts Valley today. Hi, Jeffrey. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi there. So here I am with my brand new Windows 7 installation.
Cool.
And I want to install an application software under it, and it comes back with the error message that it can't find what it's looking for on the F:drive, which is not on the system right now. F: only exists when I put a USB stick in.
So what are you trying to install?
An application. I don't think it's going to make any difference, but the one I'm after at the moment is WordPerfect.
Okay, did you install that from your USB drive?
I downloaded it to the C drive, yes, and nevertheless it's looking in F.
There is some chatter on the web. I think what's going on is that your personal document space, your personal space, is actually assigned to your USB drive for some reason, which is very strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played with 7 yet.
Okay.
Miles, have you?
Well, there may be old language. There may be old knowledge here that would be helpful.
Well, they can't find
I have a clue.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a clue. There's some chatter on the web about this error. And what they say is that you got to go into current user registry edit and convert anything that says F: to C:. But where that should be, it says percent user profile percent. So it's looking somewhere else. Do you know where the somewhere else is?
Well, the somewhere else, when you say it's looking for someone else, what do you mean?
In other words, what's happening here, I think, is that the entry that they want me to fix to say C: instead of F: does not say either one. it says percent user profile percent. So
okay,
I
so
gather that
what's going on is the percent user profile percent is actually a variable
right.
that needs to be set to something other than F. So where you set that is a little strange to me. I don't know. And it's very strange that F is the one that's being picked because most systems don't have an F.
Right.
So, yeah, that, I mean, that's what you've got to edit. The question is what?
Where?
The question is where is that editing?
Right.
And I have a feeling that if you take – I mean, if it's – is anything else problematic on your system, or is that the only thing?
So far, this is my first major glitch.
I mean, have you changed the background desktop color?
I'm sorry, what?
Have you changed the desktop color?
No.
Try doing that and see if you get a similar type of error. If my intuition is correct – your actual root location of representation of you and where your data is stored is set to F.
Right. So
now, the other thing you could do if you want is you could stick your thumb drive in and install the operating system, install this thing, and it will work. But it only work when the thumb drive is installed. So that's not the best solution for you, most likely.
Well, it gets my application software installed.
What's that?
It would get my application software installed. But
yes, but
it,
then
yeah,
once your application started to run and you pulled your drive out, it might not work.
I suppose I could leave a USB drive in there forever, eh? But, I prefer a little more elegant solution if we could arrange it.
That's a good idea. I'm sorry I don't have more suggestions.
Thank you so
much. But
what
I'll do is this. Anybody that knows the answer to this question, I'm sure there's someone listening that knows, please participate in our forums. And, Jeffrey, you can participate in our forums, too. And I bet you somebody will answer this very quickly.
Okay. Where do I find your forum?
Forums.geekspeak.org. Or just go to geekspeak.org, and you'll get to it.
Great.
Thank you.
There's one other thing. You could type in percent user profile percent Windows 7 in Google.
Did you do that?
Yeah. And there's a lot of – I mean, it's a migration issue.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the thing is that – yeah, it is.
You know, because he's updating.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to run into this if you have it on your machine already, but, you know.
From Santa Cruz, Kyle, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, Lyle. It's Kyle from Denham.
Hi, Kyle.
I was just – I don't mean to backpedal here, but I was just enjoying the talk about the time-lapse app and tried to get on then and was hoping to encourage people to look at this app that I've been playing with called Glimpse, which is also a time-lapse photo app, but it geolocates each photograph.
Ooh,
and,
cool.
And they have this great – it's sort of like I got it – in its sort of beta version, and then there's a recent update where there's like a web service for it too, where you know, you can like wirelessly upload your time lapse photos to your computer and then directly to this web service where you can view other people. I just like that I can like say like put my iPhone on my handlebars of my bicycle and then end up with this slideshow that also maps everywhere that I went.
So how does it map?
Groovy.
What is it? How do you know what the GPS is? It got a little map in there, or is it just something you can look at in the info of the file? Or how does that get implemented into it? That sounds pretty neat.
I wasn't getting that over the mic. I don't know if it's
you are now, but do you understand the question? Like, how are you getting the GPS data to the picture?
I mean, is it a little map that's showing up?
Yeah, it just pulls in a Google Map. You know, just all of the iPhone mapping is
right. But so you have a video. You end up with a video, right, of a time lapse sequence.
Yeah, you end up with. It actually doesn't export as like a quick time. It just exports as a series of stills that are also
right. And so then it superimposes a map on it or something? How
does it? If I pull it directly onto my hard drive, it just like I have like a series of stills and a data file with all of the GIS.
Well, okay, so I found it. I'm going to add it to our GeekSpeak website, and
it's pretty great.
You can go ahead and install it.
I'm definitely going to try that out. That sounds
I think it's cheap. It's like $2 or something.
Yeah.
Thanks for
cool.
the
hey, thanks.
The nose.
Yeah. And
great show today, guys.
Thank you. Kyle is a student in the Digital Arts and New Media Masters of Fine Arts program, and he does a lot of work with bicycles and, and documentation of location based on travel. So really interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's really great. There's a bunch of augmented reality stuff that's coming out right now, too, that's pretty exciting. So I'll leave it there. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kyle. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Next call. I think we're going to go on to another call. Yes, we are. Hey, let's go to Seaside this time. In Seaside, we have James. James, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, no, we have Terry. James, hold on. Terry, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Terry from Aptos.
Hi.
My daughter has an Acer laptop. One morning she turned it on and the background picture was gone, and it appeared that all of her music and pictures were gone. But once I, that was, if you do the start menu, go to My Pictures, My Music, they were empty. But when I did a search, I could locate them. But I don't know what happened, so I don't know how to fix it.
Okay. It's very possible that you have two accounts on that machine, and you and one is the account that you should log in that has information, and the other is account that you don't. So that's a possibility that you just need to switch users and look at the different users. That would be if everything was easy and simple in the universe.
Right.
I'm not sure if that is the case. Miles, get an idea?
I was just thinking, you said you were able to find it. Where did you find it?
I did a search.
Right, and do you know the path of the files? Meaning, on the hard drive, is it under C, documents and settings, and some username?
Oh, now how do I, on this one, I wasn't sure how to find that out.
So what we do in Windows, what Windows version are you using?
XP.
Okay, so in Windows XP, you can turn on some settings that all the geeks use. And that is, one of them, what you do is, on your desktop, you right-click on the desktop, and you pull up properties? No,
That's display settings.
Where do you get?
What are you trying to get?
Trying to turn on the path in the title bar.
Ooh, I have long since forgotten that.
Yeah. Okay. We don't know how to do it. Windows fails today. Yeah, it's not really the right place. What we're trying to do is show invisible files in the same area that you can do that. You can also do show path to files. That basically, whenever you have a document open, you kind of see where it is.
Oh, show full path. Okay, that would be within the Windows Explorer, the file manager, and you say view options.
Yeah. I want to say view options. Okay,
view options.
So go into the Explorer, open view options, and then in view options you can see some different things you can turn on, like show invisibles or always show extensions, another one we like to do. That way you know the file type of the file you're going to open.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, you turn those on, one of the things you can turn on is show full path. And then when you do that, you'll actually see where in your system it is. And my hope is that you actually just have a couple users on your system. Another thing to do is just switch users and see if you have multiple users on your system.
That seems odd, because it seems to me a search would have provided the full path.
I have a feeling that something got damaged.
Maybe if I click on one of the things that I have...
Do you have a backup of your system?
No, and that's what I have to get for her.
Yes, take this opportunity to... The fear and stress you had about those things being gone and then you found them via search?
Yes.
Count your lucky stars and go get a USB device.
Yeah, take that stress and refocus it towards a computer shop that has an external hard drive.
Then purchase that, come back, and run the backup.
Wait, that was another question. I have an external hard drive for mine. Is it possible to put more than one computer on one external hard drive?
Yeah, it is. The simple one push button thing might not function as well, but it probably will.
Okay.
You're taking a slight risk in that you might be, what would happen, let's say you back up all the time to your system, then you back up hers. When you do that, if it's always putting it in the same location and it uses the storage information of what to back up in there, it looks like a complete new of the system, and you'll copy a complete new copy of hers. Then you'll back up yours, you'll copy a complete new copy of yours. Normally what they actually do is they look for changes and they only change the changes. And in the situation where you're using two computers, even if they're expecting one, you'd get 100% change every time and you'd be really filling up your drive quickly. So it's probably best to go ahead and spend $60 or something like that to get a new USB drive and do that. Assuming that that the photos are important. Another thing you can do if it's a low use machine is you can just make sure that all the data gets out in the ether, up in the cloud. Though that's not as stable as we'd hope. It's probably more stable than not having a backup solution.
So just
you go get a free Flickr account, right? Start uploading your images on that.
Okay,
for example,
because I don't know if this computer is going to last much longer anyway.
That might be the way to go. The other thing you could do is you can do a manual copy. You know where the photos are? You plug that USB drive from your computer onto it, and you just copy the files over into a folder called daughter's photos.
Okay.
Right? And then if she gets more photos, you have to maintain it, and that becomes the difficult thing. That's why we always recommend a software solution to this, so you don't have to be thinking about every time, is this a new file or is this one new?
Uh-huh.
So there you go. Thank you very much, Terry, for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. James, you were very patient. We have very little time, but welcome to GeekSpeak. What's your question?
Hi, I was wanting to know if it's possible to do password-protected podcasts.
No.
Not if you go through iTunes.
I mean, is it possible? Yes, but not easily.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can have DRM audio, but through a podcast, that would be...
It's password protected. He wants to be able to sell it. Basically, there's no way to financially do that There are some things you can do. You can actually make an RSS feed with a download where the download, you have to be logged in. So everybody subscribes, and then they go up to the website, and then they log in, and they can download it. But the client software rarely supports that. So you're in a situation where you need to use your browser to download the file, and therefore it's not an RSS feed. It's not a podcast.
You can password protect access to it, but not
right.
the actual.
You can password protect access, but then your iTunes wouldn't be able to download it.
Right.
You'd have to go to your browser to download it.
Right.
I see. So it takes the automation of getting it to your iPod.
That's right, and removes that completely. James, yeah. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
It takes the resources of a multi-billion-dollar company like Apple to get that right.
But they're, yeah, right.
And iTunes,
and of course
you can
not.
Choose, yeah,
that's right,
like a whole
subscribe.
Season. And then,
yeah, man, I'm jealous. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, offering a master's degree programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. Class is now forming for January. UAT.edu/masters. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. My name is Lyle Troxell. Answering the phones today was Rick. And here in the air room is Miles Elam and Al Luckow, USB of the Week.
Yes. There's something important I want to do. So instead of the crazy USB device of the week, today I bring you a USB public service announcement.
Okay.
Recently, during one of my intense research sessions scouting out crazy USB devices, I discovered something horrific. Now, for sensitive listeners, you may want to cover your ears. I was scanning through a list of USB links when I saw it. Somebody tattooed the USB symbol on their arm. I have a link to it on geekspeak.org. I'm not talking about some little tiny tattoo. This was gigantic, a gigantic blue mark that covered their entire forearm. I was shocked, as you can imagine. Then I started seeing more and more of these things. It turns out lots of people have these. I just want to remind everyone that tattoos are permanent, and I hate to break it to you, but computer technologies are outdated almost as soon as they come out. So I'm here at the 12-Step Tattoo Recovery and Rehabilitation Clinic, Geek Tattoo Anonymous, to ask a few members for a firsthand look at their tragic, tragic mistakes. Hello, sir. I see you are a member of Geek Tattoo Anonymous. May I inquire as to what brought you here?
Hi, my name is Lyle.
Wait. This is supposed to be anonymous.
Oh.
How about if I call you Reese Witherspoon?
Okay.
So, would you feel comfortable sharing your tattoo with our listeners, Reese?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh my. I'm sorry. Can you tell me about how this happened?
Well, yeah, sure. You know, you remember when dual density floppy disk came out, right? They had twice as much as a single density floppy, and I thought that was really cool. So then a new technology came out on the scene. It was a 44 megabit cartridge drives, right? And I couldn't believe, like, 44 megabytes all in a little cartridge. It was very cool. And I was immediately on board with that. Like, I bought it and everything. Then, amazingly, 88 megabyte cartridges came out. And I thought, what could be cooler than that? So I got a picture of an 88 megabyte cartridge drive tattooed to my chest with the words, "Yes, I'm the biggest."
You hear that, folks? Let's ask somebody else. What about you, sir?
Hi, I'm...
Wait. Protect your identity. I'm going to protect your identity. I'm just going to call you Johnny Cash.
Okay.
So, Johnny, may we see your tattoo? Oh, man. Oh. What were you thinking?
Well, a while back, hooking additional storage to your computer was really a pain. And then more and more external drives started adopting SCSI connectors. It was really great to daisy chain storage onto your computer, to a limit, of course. I was a SCSI king. Then SCSI 2 came out. It had a thinner, much more sexy connector. It clipped on easier and was just overall cool. So on the back of my neck, I had this image of a SCSI 2 input with the words, "Think fast," under it.
As you can see, these stories are tragic. I have nothing against tattoos, but please, I beg you, if you're getting a tattoo in any way related to computers or technology, please make it a henna tattoo. They wear off in about a month and can look pretty cool for a while, but you're not labeled your entire life with an outdated technology.
Al, is that a flock of seagulls tattoo on your arm?
Hey, man, they're coming back.
Thank you for the crazy USB of the week, Al. As you do every week, I really appreciate it. This is Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Geeks Today, Miles Elam, Al Luckow. We're here every week at 10 o'clock on Saturdays. If you'd like to participate on the show in different ways, we allow you to do so all week long by going up to geekspeak.org, submitting questions to the forums, offering suggestions to improvements to the show. And, of course, we're taking theme songs. Be like Newman. Make a theme song.